Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 103 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today is a very special day. We're here with Susan Miller to celebrate her one-year sugarversary, as I call it. So a full year now, June, we're recording this one day early. It's June 1st, and it was June 1st a year ago that Susan gave up all sugar and flour. And we've been with her along her journey, which has been really, really amazing to witness and see how much she's transformed in this past year. I'll link the previous episodes. If you haven't listened along, you should. We started with episode 45, which was titled before. That was when she was deciding that she really wanted to do this. And then we checked in episode 49 was about 2 weeks in. And then episode 53 was 6 weeks in. Episode 57 was a little over 2 months. Episode 61 was 3 months. Then we jumped to episode 74, 8 months. And then the last episode we did was episode 93, and I called it a year in reflection because really she started this journey in March and started giving up sugar and flour, but had a few slips. So she decided June 1st was her real day. So here we are, episode 103, 1 year later, June 1st. Congratulations, Susan. It really is amazing. And I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. As you were going through that, I was just having just flashbacks and memories of all those benchmarks, that period of time, you know, over all these episodes, and just how different I am today than I was a year ago, or a year and 2 months ago, for sure.
It'd be really interesting for you to listen to that episode 45, our first one before. And I have to say, first of all, thank you so much for sharing with us along your journey and being so vulnerable. I know when you reached out to me originally, I kind of latched on and said, yes, I want to help you, but can we interview this for the podcast? Can we show your journey? And that really takes a lot of courage. So thank you for doing that, for sharing your vulnerability. I know you've helped a ton of people. But what's cool about that too, is now we kind of have that record where you can go back and kind of listen. Like I have my journal and, you know, it's really hard for me to sometimes look back at some of those earlier times and months but also shows me how far I've come too. You know, it's a nice kind of benchmark to see, oh, wow, that's what I was thinking then. Cause I've changed so much. You know, so I kind of sometimes forget where I started. So you're going to have to go through and listen to some of these this summer. You know, I always go on hiatus during the summer. So it might be a good time for you to listen and really reflect yourself on how far you've come.
Yeah, I probably will do some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So congratulations. Here we are at 1 year. Let's start with just some positive stuff as far as the changes that you have seen. I know we talked a little bit about that last time, but really, what do you think the biggest differences have been, you know, now that you're a year through? Like, kind of talk, because, you know, a lot of people listening want to give it up, don't know if they can do it. And I think it's really nice to hear from people that are on the other side of, you know, I mean, you didn't know if you could do it. No one in the beginning, I thought I would never be able to do it. So talk about a little bit, you know, where you are now versus when you started.
I think the biggest thing that that is different today than a year ago is that when I think about something that I want to eat, I honestly don't immediately think about the things that I did a year ago. You know, I get excited about a Cosmic Crisp apple instead of a Fuji, you know, some of the recipes that are my favorite recipes. I think about those and I get excited about having that for lunch or, you know, I really would have never thought that I would not think about my go-to foods as, you know, like a celebration or, you know, if I'm down. I don't, I may still emotionally eat, like we have been on vacation. Of course, we had a Memorial Day weekend and I got a little rowdy and ate some peanut butter, which I haven't had in a long time, you know, something like that. But
that's,
I just
considered rowdy now as peanut butter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big change right there.
Yeah. I just don't even think about the kinds of things that I would have eaten and I would have done a year ago. And I just think that my emotional state is the biggest change for me because, you know, when we were just getting started, when I first reached out for you, I can remember that last bakery run. And I've talked about that in other podcasts, you know, just how much I was already grieving. I hadn't even gotten all of it down yet. And I was grieving over losing it and just thinking that I life was just going to be so miserable without it. And now, I mean, I'll never say that I laugh at it because I have too much compassion for myself as an addict and for the addicts that I work with. But it is almost laughable that that I ever had those kinds of feelings. But, you know, but not really. But it's the emotional change. Because I will say that physically, the miracles that I hear about physically, even from you, you remember that we talked about how you're 20 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, one of my big messages now when I talk to people about addiction is that we don't realize what we're doing to our bodies until decades down the road. And at 60, having been an addict and practiced that kind of behavior in one form or another, whether it was anorexia or bulimia or overexercise, any of those things, I am seeing a much greater impact than somebody who begins this journey younger will probably see. And I try to be careful that when, you know, I don't have a good day, even if it's just with my husband, and I have degenerative bone disease, particularly in my vertebrae. And I'm about to probably have some nerves ablated in my neck because I'm in so much pain. But, you know, stopping eating sugar, flour, and for me, alcohol, it is not magic. And it's especially not magic when, you know, you have abused your body for decades. So I make sure that people understand that, you know, when I have a bad day physically today, any number of things, you know, it's not, it would be far worse had I not stopped the sugar. And I'm very aware of that, that I would just be getting worse and worse instead of on a better trajectory. But, you know, it isn't magic. And we have to level our expectations, I think, when we're older. You know, I definitely feel so much better than I did before. And I do not regret what I've done at all. But, you know, I just wish that I had started earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I even think that when I hear people like that figure this out in their 20s, you know, like I figured out my late 30s. So I think we're always like kind of, you just think of how much time you wasted in a way, or how much time I think of how much more damage I caused to my body, you know, all those years. But then I also think, you know, it's better late than never. And I'm very grateful at least we did it, because it would be so much worse, you know, even 10 years down the road for both of us if we hadn't kind of turned it around when we did. So
Yes. Yeah. And an example of that is, you know, with that calories in, calories out mentality, you know, on a day after Thanksgiving, after I had eaten, you know, all of the carbs that you could possibly imagine that come along with a Thanksgiving dinner in the South, I would get on the treadmill and literally pound that treadmill, run for hours at a time the next day, thinking that I was, you know, getting rid of those calories and not going to gain that weight. Well, really, all I was doing was creating this problem with my vertebrae that I'm dealing with today, you know. So, you know, just the things that I did to try to manage my addiction. And if I had only known back then that I was an addict instead of a compulsive eater, a binge purger, a restrictor, an over-exerciser, you know, all of those labels, you know, if I had known instead that I was an addict and that the treatment was so much different as an addict, then, you know, I could have avoided a whole lot of pain. But, you know, part of it is just where we are as far as medicine goes and nutrition education goes. You know, I've been a nutrition educator for, you know, almost four decades, but it's been with the USDA guidelines and all of those things that have contributed to our, you know, our nation for sure, probably the whole world, because so goes America, so goes the world. But, you know, I was espousing the very guidelines that have put us in this, you know, obese pandemic that we're in. So.
Yeah, like from, you know, just with Dr. Robert Lustig, who I interviewed recently, talks a lot about that and how we got here and, you know, in his book, Metabolical. So, yeah.
Metabolical is by far the best book mm-hmm. I have read so far that describes the way that we got in the shape that we're in today. Just, exactly. Yeah, I highly
everyone needs to read that, you know, like, yeah. Even if you're not a sugar addict, that's what I tell people, yeah. Like, even my mom is reading it right now, and it's just been blown away, even though I've been telling her a lot of this stuff, but just the way he says it too, and the science that he has that backs it up is just incredible. So
yeah, he has a 74 page bibliography. You know, that yeah. It's separate from the book, but I mean, that's how much research he put into
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you're right that a big part of this is that this is kind of a newer conversation though about processed foods in some ways and getting like, they're just, again, not having that sugar addiction diagnosis. Yeah. Like for me, it was, I thought I had binge eating disorder. So I was getting, trying to help myself in my 20s, knew I had a problem. But like you said, if I had known that it was addiction underlying, I would have been in the treatment, therefore way different than binge eating disorder, which is everything in moderation, you know,
yes.
I would have been able to help myself a lot sooner. So that's a big part of this. And why I think doing the podcast and talking and sharing our stories is so important so that we can kind of hit those people in their 20s and earlier that think, you know, are struggling and it right actually might be an addiction issue underneath, you know? So, I mean, I think that's the other thing you really have to think about is there just wasn't as many resources available as there is now. I really feel like I'm excited to be a part of this movement at this time, because I think there's just a lot of momentum building around this. So that wasn't as easy, you know, definitely when you were in your 20s, you know, that wasn't, you know, you didn't have
No, that was not the message.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can only do the best you can with the information that you have, right? And thank gosh, the information is now, like the nutrition, you know, information is changing. Like we are aware of processed food and what it's doing to us and that it's addictive. You know, there's just so much more research and emphasis on that now.
Well, and the availability of the information. Mm-hmm. I was laughing with my husband just last week over, and I forget the context of why this conversation came up, but you know, we didn't have the internet in the 90s, which for me was a very formative time of my nutrition, my professional, you know, achievements. All of that was going on very much for me in the 90s. And it wasn't until the mid 90s that we even had the World Wide Web. You know, we were like, what in the world is that? So just the availability of information today is, you know, it's a shame that we have so much conflicting information to wade through, but at least we have it and we can use, you know, our minds to make decisions and to take personal responsibility for our health instead of allowing somebody else to do that for us.
Exactly. No, it's so true. Yeah. Well, and we were talking before we started that, you know, another big change is it's been over a year since you've been inside that bakery. How does that feel too, as far as, and also like, has that urge gone away, you know, to like, has your car stopped kind of drop, you know, turning automatically towards the bakery, or how does that feel from the beginning?
Yeah, that's such a good question because, you know, in all honesty, I wouldn't say that it is an urge, but that craving, that memory is still, you know, I can't say that I'm one of those people that is just so thankful to be for the gift of being sugar-free, you know, and I don't really feel that way about it. If I allow myself to think about it, it will make me sad again because I did just enjoy it so much. I mean, just even, and it's that addictive brain, but the whole process from the thinking about it, the talking yourself out of it a little bit, and then crossing over to make that decision to do it, and then planning it, that whole thing is so easy to come up inside me. But I do want to emphasize that more than that now, I'm able to move on to, but for lunch, I'm going to have XYZ and it's going to be so good and I love it, you know. So those feelings don't cripple me anymore and don't make me just sad and angry and all kinds of negative emotions. You know, it doesn't do that to me anymore.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people, I'm so glad that I don't have to play that game. I do not miss that at all. I did really enjoy it, but I had so much guilt and shame wrapped in it. I do not miss that at all. Plus I do also really enjoy the food that I eat. I think that's another big misconception out there is that like, you then have to give up liking food. And I've never been a foodie. You are an amazing cook, I know. I'm not, I'm very simple, but I still love food. And like still breakfast is my favorite meal of the day. Like I get so happy. I'm like humming when I eat breakfast because I love eating my breakfast every morning and I look forward to it so much. So I don't think you have to, you can still, and I do think for me, that's a key to sustaining this is making sure you're still satisfied, satiated, and even get pleasure from the food that you're eating. It's just like my taste buds have changed where now I never thought I'd be the person that craves vegetables, but I like love a good salad and vegetables. I can taste like the sweetness in like broccoli and cauliflower, things that I never could before. And I just enjoy eating so much. It's just no longer my obsession. Like I can actually, like we had a Memorial Day celebration yesterday too with my in-laws. We had like a fiesta. It was, you know, kind of Mexican themed food. It was really fun. And, but I instead of being obsessed about the food and what I was going to eat and not eat, I just enjoyed eating, but enjoyed the company of my family even more. And that's something I just didn't do before. Like I could care less who I was sharing a meal with. It was all about the meal. Have you felt that shift at all? Like, are you, when you are eating, especially with friends and gatherings, do you find that you can relax a little bit more maybe and be more present and engaged since you're not like, am I going to have that piece of cake or I'm not going to have that piece of cake? Or should I just bring it home? You know, like all the things that you're kind of saying to yourself in your mind.
Yeah, I have definitely seen a shift there. Now, I am a natural introvert, but I think a lot of my introverted nature was more a aspect of addiction, in that it was the isolation, you know. So yes, I have seen a shift when I'm with other people that I am. It's much easier to focus on conversations and to enjoy being with the people than it is just about the food. So yes, I definitely see a difference there. I do still have to be very careful though. Every event that I go to, I have to be very prepared. People are so very used to me being odd man out though when it comes to food. Nobody bats an eye when I do strange things, whether it's family or friends. They all know me that well. And I do some pretty radical things to protect my abstinence. And, it might be something that where everybody is having fast food, and I pull my emergency meal out of the trunk, dump it in a bowl and eat it, you know, which I've done a number of times recently. I've done it traveling with other people and I've done it on my own. And it almost makes me feel, it just makes me feel like I'm taking care of myself, which, you know, I did not do before. You know, I was thinking too much about, well, I was using the excuse of what others would expect. Mm-hmm. To allow me to get back into my addiction. And so I just don't do that anymore. I take care of myself instead.
But do you also feel like, yeah, that you, from the beginning, you kind of, before, for me anyway, it was hard being like that odd person out, like, you know, pulling out that emergency meal when everyone else was having their fast food, versus like now a year later, does that feel much easier to do? Because people are used to it too. Like the more you do it, and the more you share with people, like, yeah, me again, 3 years into this, no one bats an eye at me either. But in the beginning, I remember it being very difficult for me to kind of be that person. Have you seen that kind of progress?
Well, not as much as you would, of course, because see, I have always been that person, because mm-hmm. I've been in nutrition and I was a nutritional therapy practitioner before I even went sugar free, and I went through periods of paleo, keto,
yeah,
low carb, high fat, carnivore. I've done it all. So people were yeah, so used to me anyway, that giving up sugar, that they weren't surprised at all. And I haven't felt really odd man out even, you know, because yeah, I was before. So yeah, it's not been probably quite as dramatic for me as it might've been for you or somebody else.
But I like how you said you, and I agree with this, like, I feel this too. You'll do what you need to do to take care of yourself and protect your abstinence, you know? Yes. So even if that is, you know, same thing. And I think that's lifelong too, that you have to remain prepared. You do have to put a little more thought into things. Like, I never go to a party or a gathering hungry, you know, or without bringing something that I know I can eat, you know, like, to me, that's just yeah, like the basics of how you kind of manage that is just to always be prepared so that you are protecting your abstinence, you know, no matter what. So.
And that's why I have an emergency meal in all of my vehicles. It just takes away all the excuses, you know, even if I go somewhere and I'm not able to pull that out in front of a lot of people, you know, I can dump it in the bowl when I get back in the car and eat it on the way home.
What is your emergency meal? I bet people are interested that are listening.
Oh, yeah.
Something that can stay in the car.
Yeah, I have a plastic container that has a can of green beans, a can of sliced black olives, and what else? Well, the can opener, if I have to have that. Oh, and fruit, canned fruit in juice. Now that I don't eat unless I just have to, but I typically will. And I also keep beans, which I hope not to have to use those either. Remember, this is an emergency meal. So right, typically what I will do is I will stop and get a beef patty and have that with my green beans and my black olives, because the black olives are a fat, a healthy fat, mm-hmm. and the green beans are a vegetable, and I'll put a hamburger patty with it, you know. But if I had to, if I couldn't get to other food, I would eat the beans as my protein, you know, like the, not the green beans, but like I have kidney beans or black beans or I guess that's the only ones I have that are protein.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just a good tip to really being.
It's canned food, you know. Oh, yeah. And nuts. I keep nuts in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, for an emergency. Cause yeah, a lot of times, like when I need to do something, I'll go to a Whole Foods or wherever and get a rotisserie chicken. I know that's something already cooked that I can get right away and eat, you know, have my protein right away. But sometimes you're not somewhere you can do that. So having an emergency kit in the car, I think is really, really smart.
And when I travel, I carry a cooler with me everywhere I go, you know, and I always have my breakfasts already packed. And, you know, I keep cold vegetables like cherry tomatoes and celery and cut up colored peppers, you know, red and orange peppers, and fill in with those too. So, yeah, I take a cooler everywhere I go.
And we're kind of talking about this just, but I'm just, that kind of hit me because we were talking about this before we started recording, just how far you've come in your eating journey. Again, before when we first started talking, you were pretty carnivore, really careful about even eating any vegetables. And I remember telling you, like, you need to eat more. And you're really worried about this, and kind of lead into kind of that magic number and talking about, you know, the scale and stuff. But I know you were really worried about gaining weights. And so you were really kind of like strict. So I think for me, just observing to hear you say now that you keep cherry tomatoes and peppers cut and green beans, that's just amazing. Even beans, kidney and black beans, you know, which have some carbs to them. You were very, very low carb. So that's been a really big change too. You want to talk a little bit about that from, your perspective?
Well, and of course, a lot of that had to do with digestion too, which, and I got into trouble with carnivore with my kidneys.
Yeah.
So that kind of led me into a more balanced way of thinking. I would still say that for the most part, I mean, in the mornings when I get up, I'm still typically in ketosis. I have a blood ketone meter and I'll check every now and then. And usually I'm in low nutritional ketosis when I get up in the mornings, which for me is like somewhere between 0.5 and 0.7. And that's with eating a very balanced, I mean, now I eat meat, vegetables, some dairy and fruits, fresh fruits. So yeah, I'm still somewhat low carb, but it's very different than it was when I started. Yes. And I was terrified of gaining weight. And I actually weigh less now than I have ever weighed in my adult life. I'm not as afraid of food as I once was. That's for sure.
Yeah. And that's huge because I know for some people, the carnivore, very low carb works. I'm not saying, you know, it's just like a reminder, you have to experiment and see what works for you. But I think a lot of people can, you know, for me, I need to eat the greens and the, you know, I can even handle some grains like we were talking about before, where some people might not be able to. But I do think, you know, if you can get more, there's just so many vitamins and minerals and, you know, the green stuff and fruits too. It's just seeing how you tolerate them. I think the real key is if there's anything that you find, although we've both discussed, Susan and I are not volume eaters when it comes to eating whole unprocessed foods. Like I thought I had binge eating disorder, but that's only with the processed foods, particularly sugar, flour. But I don't feel like that's an issue for me typically, you know, is volume. So, and I know we were talking kind of about that too, because for some people it is, but I think if you can eat a variety of things, you get just a lot more nutritional benefits that way. But again, figuring out, and that's why I like to say just one way of doing this, there's not one diet that fits everyone. And there's not one way of becoming, you know, abstinent that works for everyone too. So I'm really, it's been neat, Susan, watching you really kind of experiment along the way. And people will see that if you listen back to those previous episodes, you know, you talk about when you had the kidney issues and then when you were starting to experiment some more with dairy. And then I remember it was a huge deal when you allowed yourself to have an apple, you know, and fruit. So
yeah.
You've really have come a long way. So that's just what I kind of want to point out to people is it's going to evolve too, you know, for everybody. And I think in the beginning, a lot of people are worried about want to lose weight. I was like that. Or for you, you didn't want to like gain any weight, but it's interesting. Once you kind of find that and lock in on that balance that works for you, your body just kind of gets to that weight that is appropriate for, you know, for your body type. And so, you know, that's different for everybody. But I think you had a good, we were talking a little bit about the number for you before. So talk to us a little bit about that. Like, I know you finally got rid of the scale too, or pretty much, which was huge because you were a daily weigher, right? Or weekly?
Yes, I was a daily weigher. I didn't look at it every day, but it went, I had scale that synced with my app and it went into that. And then, you know, about once a month, I would look and see what the, you know, what the trend was and that kind of thing. I did get rid of my own scale. My husband still has one though. And just out of curiosity, I still occasionally will weigh and it's still not good for me though. And I guess the main point I'd like to make about that is that the addictive mind, it just, that way of thinking just hangs on for a very long time. I'm a year down the road and I still would say that I have a lot of obsessive and compulsive thoughts when it comes to food, certainly when it comes to weight. I have a magic number in my head that I have had since I was probably 16 years old. And I hit one of those numbers, you know, because there's always been two for me. There's been one that I'm like, if I could just get there, I would be just fine, you know, but then there's been the second number that I'm like, gosh, that would be so much better. And that's what the charts say. And, you know, it would just be perfect. So, you know, for
here
me,
you are, I just want to say you hit that first number, which you would have been thrilled to even do that, but then you hit it and right away, well now I want to go lower.
And I do know that, I know for sure that that second number, it's attainable, but it's not maintainable or sustainable. I would not be able to eat in a way that I'm satisfied on a daily basis and maintain that number. So I got to go through another grief process there, I think, you know, but I just, the fact that, you know, that again, I'm trying to emphasize to people that, you know, the world is not going to be sunshine and roses when you give up sugar and flour. You know, things are going to be so much better. You're going to feel so much better. But there's still that if you are truly an addict, and that is the person that I work with, is the addict. It's just going to be a lifelong, it's just healing. It's healing your brain. You have to be very patient with that. And I get the weight loss thing. I'm working with a couple of people now, you know, that I get that they want to get the weight off, and that they right now, and I certainly would allow them to think, you know, that's gonna do it for them, you know. But you know, as we get closer to having the weight off, that's when we need to start having the discussion about, you know, it's not going to be, your journey is never going to be over, you know? So yet, that's where I am now.
And
just still having
those
thoughts.
That number can really throw you off. Like you were talking too earlier about, like, you want to really have freedom from this, right?
Yeah.
Really be free. Yeah. If you're obsessing about that number and then trying to scale back, cut back, then you're not really free. I know I've been tempted actually recently to weigh myself. And just a reminder, my daughter just turned 6. I haven't weighed myself since I was pregnant with her. So it's been at least 6 years. And, but I'm curious because for me, just looking at myself and by the clothes sizes that I buy, because I have a number in my head too. I'm the smallest I've been, you know, ever. So I'm curious where I am with that number, but I'm like, why would I do that to myself? Because it's probably, I'm probably higher than what I think I am. And then that, I don't know what that would do to me. I don't know if that would be enough to lead to, you know, to trigger me enough to have a food that I, you know, that I'm not supposed to have, or I don't eat anymore. I just don't even want to go there. But I still sometimes, again, I think what you're saying with the addictive brain, it will come up a little bit like, aren't you curious? Don't you want to look? You know, it like sneaks that little sneaky thought in there. And I'm like, nope, I feel so good. That's what I want to focus on more than the number, is just how good I feel and how my clothes fit and all that stuff. Because I can guarantee, even like you said, even if it is the number that I think, you know, that was my goal, then I'd probably be like, oh, yeah, I wish I could go 5 pounds. You know, it's just an endless cycle, I think. So I really am a big believer in giving up the scale and trying to more focus on how comfortable you are in your clothes and in your skin. And for me, the mobility, you know, because I did lose a lot of weight. I don't know how much, but just being able to move around more, you know, been a huge gift is having that mobility. But I think that can be very addictive, hitting that number too.
Yeah, that's the point that I want to make, is a year down the road, I'm still an addict. Once an addict, always an addict. Once a pickle, never a cucumber, you know. I'm very cognizant of that. And I not only try, that's part of protecting my abstinence.
Is,
you know, and that's one of the reasons that I work such a strong 12-step program. It keeps me from, even when I do weigh and I still have those thoughts of either positive or negative and the kinds of behaviors that always led me to. See, I still have those same reactions to that number on the scale, but working my 12-step program keeps me from reacting negatively to whatever that reaction is.
Yeah.
So that's very important to me.
And talk to us more about your 12-step, because for you, and that's a difference between you and I, and another example of how I can do this differently, 12 steps never resonated with me. But for you, that's been critical to your success, a big foundation. So talk to us a little bit more about that, because I know you sponsor people too. So share whatever. I know it's you know, private too, but share what you want to about that, just for what you'd like to kind of tell people, you know, about your own, just how much it's helped you and supported you.
Well, you know, it's one of the main things that it did for me is to take me out of isolation. You know, I am committed now to that community of people. I have at least two different groups. One is the larger group meeting that I go to, that's on a weekly basis. And then I also have been involved in two different 12-step studies, which is a very small group of people who get very close and work through just a series of questions that really gets into your, you know, it's spiritual, but it's also emotional, and you become very close to these people. You depend on them, they depend on you. And especially when you're either sponsored or you are a sponsor, you know, that's a level of accountability that most of us in 12-step recovery take very seriously. And for me, it's been true that the times that I have not wanted to go to a meeting is when I really needed to be there. And I always come away more motivated and ready to, you know, to continue my abstinence. And in fact, this Thursday night, I'll get my 1-year chip, and that's a really big deal.
That's huge.
So, and those people, I mean, I'll get a standing ovation for that. That's a huge thing, you know, and that's very motivating too.
With people that get it, you know, that really, really get it. We were talking about that and how huge, you know, people listening to this get it too. But just to be able to celebrate and receive that is so, so huge as part of that support, ongoing support, community, and accountability. You know, that's going to keep you going too. Just even having that chip, remembering that standing ovation, you know, if 3 months from now, yeah, life happens and through, you know. So yeah, I think that's all really, really important. And I bet it's the responsibility of sponsoring someone too, I bet is help so much. Cause again, for the accountability, you're going to want to, if you're, you know, you're going to want to walk the walk. If you're talking the talk, you got to walk the walk, right? With your
yeah. And we have to, I mean, that's yeah, a requirement, you know, I mean, to be in leadership in 12 step recovery. I mean, there's a set of guidelines and rules that we follow, you know, and abstinence is part of that. So yeah, that part of it is very motivating, and just, you know, being able to make a difference in somebody else's life. I mean, that's why you and I do what we do. Yeah. And you can get support on, a lot of people are dependent on Facebook groups.
Yeah.
And that, I think that can be very helpful, but it can also be harmful in that you have a lot of folks in those groups that like the, it's kind of like girls who want the wedding but don't ever get past the wedding to being married and what that's going to be like. You know, there are a lot of people in those groups that like the idea of being sugar free and want to be sugar free, but they're not willing to do the work to do that, and they're just continually coming back over and over again talking about the ways that they fall off the wagon or jump off the wagon, you know. And that can be very very discouraging, you know. So I think it's important, whether it's 12 step or another group of people, but to find people who are committed and who are successful, because that is you like, what is it? The mirror neurons that we yeah, have talked about before. You need to be with people who have what you want.
And Joan Inflin talks a lot about that concept of mirror yes, neurons. Yeah. Watching. Yeah. It's not even something that we're doing consciously. It's just, yeah. And I think you're right. I know you and I've talked about that before. And that was something when I was creating my group coaching program that really resonated and stuck with me, because you said, you know, you have been a part of groups before where there are people that ends up being more discouraging because they are falling, you know. So, and that's why I charge for it too, you know, what I do. I just feel like I've gotten a really good group of people because I know they're really committed to it, you know? Yes. And so to me, that's why I do charge a certain amount, because I need them to be kind of all in, because I think of that mirror neuron concept and just the kind of the group dynamic is everyone needs to really be, what is it? Like, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? So you want to yes, have more like-minded people together that are really committed. And that's what I have been able to find with the group I have now, which is, I think, been really, really key. So I remember you saying that, and that really has, you know, stuck with me. So I think that's good advice for people. Find, and that you might try a group that doesn't work, try another one, you know, just because one doesn't work, right, find the one that, you know, really resonates and fits with you. Cause I do think the support is so important. I am an enigma that I did it on my own, but I do not recommend that. I think it'd be a lot easier with the support. And I had my podcast and my journal, you know, I feel like that was my accountability, and the podcast still is for me, you know, it's like, that's what keeps me on track. So I do think that's really important. And then being able to, I like that about the 12 step, is being able to help other people then. Like, once you help yourself, that was always my goal. If I ever help myself, I want to help other people. And I do like that about the 12 step, that seems to be part of it, is to give back, you know, once you experience the freedom, is then to help others get there too. So I like that service part of it.
And then, of course, you have to be your own motivator too. And part of it is just stringing days together. My sponsees, they hear me say that a lot, and they quote that back to me a lot. But you know, that really is the key, is stringing days together. Mm-hmm. Because you definitely feel so much different at, I won't even say 3 months. I have to say 6 months than you do at the beginning. It takes a long time. And to start to really feel like, hey, you know, maybe I can do this. I mean, I would say even still, I had days at 7 and 8 months where I was like, is it really worth it? You know, but the more days, I would say that it was very close to the 1 year mark that I kind of crossed the bridge and thought, yeah, I can do this. I can keep doing this, you know? So some people benefit mostly from the one day at a time mentality. And I do have that in the back of my mind because that's very much a part of 12-step recovery. But I also think very often about sustainability and, you know, is this, I don't want to make my food plan or my way of eating in a way that I question the sustainability mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
Because that's what leads to relapse. You know, I could reduce my amounts to the point that I get those other 5 pounds off, but I'm also risking a binge when I do that, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't want to do that. So for me, it's more about doing the inner work to come to an acceptance of where I am than it is to keep looking for a way to get where I think I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been that way from the very beginning, you know, is learning to accept where I am. Now, am I ever going to be to look in the mirror and go, man, you look good, girl. You know, I don't think so, you know, but
you
I'm 60
look
years
good
old.
Though, girl. I'll tell you.
Well, thank you.
You look great.
You know, but I've got plenty of reasons to look in the mirror and question myself, but you know, I just don't want to do anything that is going to put me into a situation where I can't resist a binge.
Yeah. And I think that's like really important to know your triggers, you know, and for me, I also am triggered by getting too hungry or not eating enough food. And so I can't follow the same food plan month long either, because like I just got finished my period. It came exactly with that full moon, super moon. It was lunar eclipse. I mean, it was the most crazy cycle I've ever had. And I ate way more than I typically do, but I didn't worry about it. I just ate and I focused on eating healthier foods, you know, like I wasn't, you know, where before I would have been probably binging my head off. I just increased knowing that my body needed it. And here I am, you know, a week later and my appetite's back to normal. So I've really been able to learn how to trust my body. And sometimes I need to eat a little bit more. So those plans where you only eat this much every single day for the whole month just doesn't work for me, because I see myself kind of fluctuate with my cycle that I have noticed personally. So
well, yeah, and that's another good reason to stay off the scale, because if you had gotten on the scale the day after you did all that, you know, you're either going to be in misery and eat the house down, or, you know, if it didn't cause any trouble, you're going to be like, wow, you know, I can eat whatever I want.
Good
you know?
Point. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's so true. And I think, yeah, that's just really good to mention to people. And also like, we need to kind of wrap up here, but the other thing that we were talking about that we've kind of touched on that I just wanted to point out was that the rewiring of the brain takes a while. And for those, we talked about this last episode, but Susan is doing Bitten Johnson's training right now. And Bitten was on, you know, the podcast last week. And we were talking about progression, not perfection, baby steps in recovery. It was a great conversation. And Susan's doing her training. And, you know, they talk about it's the brain healing or the rewiring the brain. It doesn't happen overnight. And I love that you said you were still having those thoughts 8 or 9 months in, like, is this even worth it? Because then you hear some people that say they do like, you know, 30 days and their, you know, their life's changed. That wasn't me either. I know it took me at least 5 months before I really started seeing changes. And then at 9 months, I would say I was all in. So kind of interesting that you said, like, I was about all in probably 9 months, knew I wasn't going back. But it took a while. But even now, three plus years later, my brain is still healing. Like, I can see changes each year, like big changes. So, and I know it will just continue and continue. It is a lifelong journey. Like, so you're, like you were kind of saying, you know, it's not perfect once you give up sugar and flour and get that abstinence, because it's a journey. You know, healing, I think, is this lifelong journey and something we have to continue to work on. I do feel like it's gotten a lot easier for me. But it's something that I always will be working on, I guess, or,
well, I want to plug in at that point that, you know, that's one of the reasons that I am active in the particular 12-step recovery program that I am in. You know, they can be very specific. There's Overeaters Anonymous, there's Food Addicts Anonymous, there's the Gray Sheeters, there's a number of different ones. The 12-step recovery program I do is Celebrate Recovery. It is Christian-based. Our higher power is Jesus Christ. And, you know, we are definitely Christian. But the Celebrate Recovery program covers any hurt, habit, or hang-up that a person may have. So that's one of the benefits for me has been, you know, I have worked on the addiction part, but I can also in tandem work on other things, you know, whether it's codependency, whether it's obsessive compulsiveness. You know, there are any number of things that can attribute to our tendency to be out of control with food. So that's definitely been a benefit to me, is I'm not just working on, you know, the addiction, the chemical addiction, the drug addiction of sugar and flour. I'm also able to work on other areas that affect my emotions and are helping to heal my brain.
Yeah, other behaviors.
It's not being so specific. Other behaviors, yes.
Yeah,
it's not as
specific. We've talked about that in other episodes, and other people I've interviewed, that addiction's really transferable too.
Yes.
So yeah, you gotta work on all those behaviors in whatever way that is, you know. And for you, this 12th, that sounds amazing. Yeah. That's been what's really helped you. And we were talking about before we started recording, for me, it's been emotion code and some other right. things, like do tapping and some other things that I do. I think it's really important for us all to kind of build that toolkit of whatever speaks to you.
And I did go through therapy and coaching. You know, there are other things that you can plug into, and some of it can be costly. Some of it doesn't have to be, but, you know, we just have to sometimes go to great lengths to get to recovery.
Yeah. And do all those things, like find those supportive things, because otherwise it's not sustainable either. Like, I think first step one is, you know, getting the food, you know, like getting the sugar and the flour out, but then it's working on those behaviors and rewiring the brain. And that's really the kind of lifelong thing. And I find when I get out of balance, because I have a really strong morning routine of doing seriously 3 different meditations before I even get out of bed, and a whole tapping, you know, EFT tapping thing that I do. And I kind of got out of that habit for about a month and was starting to notice more cravings. And I thought, what's going on? And then I realized, oh my gosh, I haven't been doing. So I've tightened that back up and feel so much stronger. Yeah. So, you really have to find that support that kind of works for you though. And there's so many different options. I think that's the great thing, and why I try to interview as many different people as I can, is so that you can see there's no one way to do this. The most important thing is find the way that speaks to your soul or really resonates with you and kind of keeps you going.
And to find somebody to encourage you in that.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a group or whether it's one-on-one.
Yeah.
You need a cheerleader.
Yes. Yeah, you do. You do. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to cover or say about, you know, this year one celebration? We're so excited for you. I think people listening are probably giving you a standing ovation too, and we'll continue to check in with you for sure, because I think it is interesting. It's not like the benefits are going to stop now. You know, they keep going, and it'll be interesting to keep reflecting and see what else shifts for you. But is there anything that you wanted, any other takeaways or that you wanted to share with us today?
Well, I think something that we didn't touch on today, but maybe we have before, is an important concept that I learned from Dr. Robert Sivas, who is the carb addiction doc. I have really put a lot of effort into learning ways to soothe myself emotionally other than food. I think that is very important. It was definitely missing in my growing up years. I was pretty much on my own, and the easiest thing to do was to eat Cheetos and drink Coca-Cola. Nobody taught me how to do things that would make me feel better when I felt bad, or that I could celebrate without food. I just didn't have that when I was younger. And I think that's so important. I was very involved in organizations and competition, but that's not what we need to look for. We need to look for things that, you know, for me these days, it's stopping to work on a jigsaw puzzle that I keep up in the corner of a room, or even I have found a couple of games on my iPad that if I just need that 3 to 5 minute period of time to break that mental, you know, where you're going down that path of, ooh, this sounds good. You know, well, mm-hmm. if I just did it this, you know, to break that, you know, just something that is enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yes. Something that's enjoyable that becomes, you know, a bridge mm-hmm. to, because cravings and urges, they go in waves. I mean, that's been documented. And if you can just get past that 5 to 15 minute period when you have that craving or that urge, you feel so much better when you've made it to the other side. And especially if you've done something that you enjoy. I think that a lot of people, you know, the main things that you hear is call a friend, take a walk, you know. Well, we're all that feels and sounds trite to most of us that have been in this boat for so many years. So I'm exploring other things. You know, I made fun of people that played video games, you know, but I found a couple on the iPad that I enjoy, you know. So just really getting out there and finding something that really you enjoy, you know, take up, you know, stitching, or, you know, go walk the aisles of Hobby Lobby or some other craft store and just see if something speaks to you. It might be mm-hmm. paint by number, you know, but something that you can keep out in your house so that when you have those thoughts, you can make yourself feel better without going to the refrigerator or the pantry. That's mm-hmm. my closing thought.
I love that. Thank you. I think that's really, really good advice for people, and that it doesn't have to be a walk or call a friend, although I love to walk, but yeah, there's so many different things. You can get creative. I really like that. So,
and it doesn't have to be 30 minutes. It can be short.
Exactly.
Just break that thought process.
Yep. Yep. Just stop it in its tracks. And yeah. I love that. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today on your big anniversary here. Congratulations. You really
well, thank
be
you
proud of
and
yourself.
It means so much to me to talk to you today, because I would not be here without you and without this podcast. There is no question about it that was mm-hmm. providential that I ran across your podcast and that I met you, and you have been such an encouragement to me, and I just wish you crazy success with your endeavors to help other people, because I know you've got the magic sauce.
Well, thank you so much. Yay. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.